Well, welcome to the Pulpit and Pew podcast. My name is Zach Rowland. I'm a deacon here at First Baptist Church.
You say that?
Here with me is Pastor Matt Higginbotham. How are you doing this week, Matt?
Man, I'm doing all right. It's been a good week. Had a good Sunday, which is always nice to have a good Sunday where you got just some general good vibes going on in the room. Everything feels positive. Got to see. But this weekend, I went up to Dallas real quick because on my other podcast, I confessed to Paul that there might have been an inspection sticker issue with one of our vehicles. And
what do you mean? Like it's out of?
Like it expired October of 2023.
Okay.
Eventually.
Vintage.
Yeah.
Vintage so registration
gonna
sticker.
Going to get a classic registration sticker. And eventually the police found my wife driving that vehicle. So so she received a ticket. And usually that would just be go to the tax office, register the car,
figure out. But they were like, look, 2023, this is egregious.
No. So technically we did not own that vehicle. So my brother gave
us that car.
But my brother's up in Dallas.
So your brother got a ticket?
No.
Okay.
No, we got the ticket because the driver gets the ticket. But we had to go. I had to go get like him to sign the title. I had the title. He gave it to me when he gave me the car. Mm-hmm. But I had to get it signed. And then there's like a form that you can get signed. But you have to get it notarized for like the donation of the vehicle between people. And so I had to get him and my sister-in-law because her name's on the title as well. And then myself. All in the same place at the same time.
Sign it at the same
when there's a notary present. And that's just really complicated to do, which is why the car never got titled over to begin with. And so, but her getting a ticket made that a priority. So I went up to Dallas and did that and got to see my niece play soccer. She did great. Good job, Julia. And my nephew play baseball. Got a hit. Good job, David. Got to see my other nephew. He was doing marching band stuff later that day. I did not go to that because it was at like 4 p.m.
You got to see all the kids do something.
Yeah, I didn't see Grady do his thing, but they got second place in their little tournament from what I saw online, so that was good. On my way up, though, I was able to stop by and see Julian, so it was good to see Julian and catch up with him, took him to dinner. It's cool. good to see my kid up there. So, yeah, so it was a good weekend. Then today it was getting the car legally titled over at the title office and had to put some tires on Hannah's car and tires on my car. And yeah, so just a day, but all in all, I'm doing well. How about you? What's been going on with you for the last 7 or so days, Mr. Rowland?
Oh, not much. Man, I can't even really think of anything. Just pretty quiet week. It was a long week last week. Just lots of work. Saturday took the kids to Berry Springs Park up in Georgetown. Took him for a picnic and stuff, and then yesterday just cleaned the house a whole bunch.
Is the house spotless now?
No.
No, there are still some spots.
Not anymore.
Thanks a lot, little kids.
It's always a temporary relief. Whenever you can clean really well, give it a day or two, it's all gone. But, yeah, that's pretty much it.
All right. Well, that's good stuff. So this week, or what we do here generally, is we try to find issues that relate to the church as a whole and how we can encourage people biblically to think about their problems or the issues that they face and then to live out their faith inside of our communities that we live in. And so today we want to take a look at how to share the gospel with our friends, neighbors, coworkers, just generally share the gospel, but with an emphasis focusing on the fact that every generation has its own distinctives as you're trying to present the gospel to it, or even inside of communities, there may be some cultural distinctives that you need to be aware of if you're sharing the gospel with a someone who's Muslim or an atheist, or there may be some specific areas as well. So just to give you some ideas about how to contextualize the gospel, not to change the gospel, not to manipulate the gospel, but to make it so that we're speaking in a way that's understandable to those other generations.
So that you appeal to the
person you're speaking.
Concerns that that person might have.
Yeah, the gospel is evergreen, right? It's always needed. It's been needed since the ascension of Christ. It's still needed today.
The core tenets of the gospel have not changed.
Yeah, so I think it's good for us to maybe define what the gospel is.
Yeah.
So if you were to try to define the gospel, what are some of the core things that say, man, you've got to believe on this, you got to understand this to understand the gospel. What is that?
That God is holy, just, righteous, everything that's moral. Therefore, everything that flows after that flows logically, right? That He created a good world. That world was corrupted by sin, by our sin, still is corrupted by our sin.
Mm-hmm.
We are still sinful. And that He can't logically accept anything less than complete holiness and perfection. So we have a problem if we want to spend eternity with Him. That problem is our sin. And Christ came to live a perfect life, die, and was resurrected to show that's what's in store for us if we believe in Him and allow Him to impute His righteousness to us.
Yeah, that's a wonderful, like, almost no notes, right? Like, because it covers the nature of man as sinful in relation to the nature of God who's holy, which drives the need for salvation. Mm-hmm. It drives us towards lostness. We're lost without God. We're apart from God.
Mm-hmm.
And then it pushes us to the answer, which is that God came near to us by taking on flesh in Jesus Christ. And
He did something we would never have said that a God would do, right? Like all the other lesser gods or stories of different gods, you know, that's not something that they would do.
Yeah, self-giving.
Yeah.
And so that's just a really, it's a powerful story because it's the story of how God saves mankind. And every generation needs to hear this. Every individual person, not just generation, needs to hear the good news that comes out of the bad news, which is you're lost, and the good news is that you can be saved through not your works, mm-hmm. but by the work of Christ. And so we have this pretty simple message. Like, I mean, you gave a pretty detailed view of the gospel in 45 seconds there, like, and it covers 98% of anything that people may want to know and pick at. There's obviously a million more things we can know about the nature of God and the nature of Christ and the nature of us.
Well, that's why I start with the perfection of God, like the character of God, because a lot of the questions that I see come from people having different conceptions of God or, you know, questioning of motives or something. It's like, well, the first thing you need to understand is He's perfect, right? Like He is how you even gauge perfection. If there is no standard, He is the standard. If there is no standard, then you can't really even say anything is perfect.
Yeah. He's the measuring stick.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like somewhere there's some place that has like the official meter. Like, this is a meter. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a physical thing. This is what a meter is. This is what a gram is. This is what a...
I wonder what was a meter originally based on? Where did they derive it? Because, like...
It's not like a step or something.
No.
Yeah, I think it's... I don't know how metric system all came to be, but I know that there's a place where they store these things. Because the weight, because of the nature of, like, physical matter decaying, like, they had to... I don't know what the substance they used for the weight, but eventually they had to change that because it was no longer what a gram was. Like, this is no longer...
It was no longer ubiquitous. Like, the thing that you originally gauged it off of was no longer around.
It's no longer what it is.
Yeah.
And so we had to come up with a new thing, and I think it's like a... there's another definition for what a gram is because of that. But there is a standard by which... we have to have righteousness, and that standard is God.
Yeah.
Holy, just
God.
I was talking to Seth this week, I guess, and there was the idea that people like to challenge the morality of God as if our morality is superior to His. I'm like, well, that's your God got slavery wrong. Your God got, you know, whatever wrong. Like, like all of these things. Then we like to put God on trial culturally. We like to put God on trial.
Yep.
And but it doesn't work because He is the standard. And so while you may
use the rubric,
correct? Yeah, like He's the righteous judge, And so you don't get to put him on trial.
Yeah.
Because he's the judge. He's the one who's upholding judgment.
I like that in Job. Like, Job's talking about that a lot, right? Like, how do I even argue my case before him? Like, there's nothing I can do, so I'm just going to grovel. Like,
and then God shows up, and Job's like, yeah. See, I told you I couldn't do it.
Yeah. He was right.
I knew I couldn't do it, and now he's here, and I got nothing to say. Speak, Lord. I can't do this. Mm-hmm. So, so the gospel is needed for all generations. It's needed for all people. But to share it, sometimes you have to speak in a way that people will understand.
Yeah.
And so you were reading something to me beforehand. You want to share that here?
I had this excerpt from a Francis Schaeffer book. Have you familiar with Francis Schaeffer?
Oh, I know Frankie.
Yep. He's pretty great. I like him. As a preface to Escape from Reason, he says, if a man goes overseas for any length of time, we would expect him to learn the language of the country to which he is going. More than this is needed, however, if he is to really communicate with the people among whom he is living. He must learn another language, that of the thought forms of the people to whom he speaks. Only so will he have real communication with them and to them. So it is with the Christian church. Its responsibility is not only to hold to the basic scriptural principles of the Christian faith, but to communicate these unchanging truths into the generation in which it is living. Every generation of Christians has this problem of learning how to speak meaningfully to its own age. It cannot be solved without an understanding of the changing existential situation which it faces. If we are to communicate the Christian faith effectively, therefore, we must know and understand the thought forms of our own generation. These will differ slightly from place to place, and more so from nation to nation. Nevertheless, there are characteristics of an age such as ours which are the same wherever we happen to be.
All right.
Yeah. That point where you said, like that's kind of where, why it struck me. Like I remember this passage when we were talking about this topic.
Yeah. It's so, it's pertinent because
learning how to speak meaningfully to its own age.
Yeah, like you can go and communicate and think, man, I'm using these words. I was taught these words. You know, we have classes to teach people how to share the gospel. Here's the good news, bad news method, or here's steps to peace with God, or four spiritual laws, or the circles, or whatever it is that we're using to teach you how to share the gospel.
Yeah.
But if you're not communicating specifically to a person in front of you, you're missing out on the concerns of the person in front of you, because you're thinking, if I can just get through my monologue here, I'm gonna succeed at, and it's almost like the way Jehovah's Witnesses are, where Jehovah's Witnesses have they measure every piece of literature they give away. So, like, if they give you a Watchtower, a magazine or
that's like a pamphlet, point.
It's a point, and they measure it because there's a system, and you want to be above. They believe in a literal 144,000 as well, in kind of like a special set of eternity. Those who aren't in there probably are getting in now as well because they've had to adjust their theology as they've grown.
Yeah,
but you want to be in the 144,000, so you give away a lot more literature. Every conversation you have, everything is measured up.
Wow, so you should really start a podcast if you're a...
They probably have.
Yeah.
They probably have. Just count the hits and you're good. So, I mean, I think that there's truth in that's how they view things. But a lot of Christians, that's how we view our conversation as well. If I can just get through this, then I will have done my job.
Yeah.
What it is that I need to do. The preacher says I need to share the gospel.
Well, I tried, God. Be too quick to dust the dust off your shoes.
So I guess where I think we should begin from here when we're talking about speaking to the age, how do we divide that up? How do we divide up this is cultural?
I think loosely like generations is the easiest way for me.
Yeah, we speak in generations a lot.
Because Gen Z has come into the spotlight, or like as now that they're old enough to be more vocal, be seen on social media and stuff, and really like start to process their world, like you're starting to see a lot more from them on religion and like their thoughts and what's important to them, as opposed to Gen X or millennials or boomers or whoever.
Yeah.
That's pretty much all of them, right?
Silent generation.
Was that between the boomers and Gen X?
It's pre-boomer.
Pre-boomer?
Yeah, you have silent generation, which is like World War One babies.
Oh, okay.
Not many of them, but they're still there.
Okay. And then you, okay. I got you.
And then you get boomers, busters.
Makes sense.
Okay. X, millennial, Z, alpha.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the generation that's best.
There was never a Y, but I feel like that would be. Are you Gen X?
No. So Gen X stops like 1980, 79 is the end of the birth. So I'm 80,
feel like there should be a Y.
I'm 82. Like, and so I put myself firmly in the Saved by the Bell generation.
But that would be millennials, right?
Right. Well, yes, but not really. So like Saved by the Bell,
yeah.
Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, like if that's your background.
See, I would say that's Gen Y. I would say there's something between X and millennials, and that we're probably both, you're probably at the beginning, closer to the beginning of that, and I'm closer to the end.
It's probably just because I don't want to be a millennial. Because millennials got a lot of shade.
I've accepted I'm a millennial, but there's such a broad spectrum of millennials because the internet, right? Look, do you remember life before the internet and cell phones, or do you not?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I'm, but that's kind of like, that's kind of the watershed, that's the delineation for me between.
But the internet did come into my home while I was still in school.
Yeah.
Like America Online was on my computer whenever I was in junior high or high school.
Yeah.
Dialing up,
it existed. We didn't have it in junior high. We had dial up. Yeah.
All right. So how should I share the gospel? What are some of the issues that the Gen Z people are bringing up when they're talking about the gospel, or what are some concerns that I should be aware of?
Oh, I don't know.
What's the whole purpose of this podcast, Zach?
If I had to guess. I would say that, you have a different, let's see, oppression and things like that are very, very much in the cultural zeitgeist. Like that's the big concern now, oppression or treatment of people over any length of the historical record, you know, so even going back to biblical times, so they'll key in on that slavery thing, or
holding everyone to your standard of morality.
Yeah.
That's what we're tearing down monuments and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. It's postmodernism, which has been around a long time. It's not new to them, but it's that every generation has this, where they go through this phase where they're the smartest people that ever lived. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, your parents.
It's a progressive idea, like because we have the internet and are learning, and we know because we're on the 8th edition of this science textbook, and you were on the 6th. We know that little bit extra that you didn't know. Like it's you got to break through that first.
Another thing that I think is really powerful in that generation is there's a lot of like hyper pessimism. Like the world is
ironic pessimism almost.
Yeah, it's bad. You know, there's millennials will fall into this as well, where, you know, we can't buy a house because all the boomers bought the houses. And there's so, like, you have the boogeyman, which is the boomers who, you know, made all their money whenever, you know, you could buy a house for $20 and a sack of flour. And now there's no homes for sale for under $500,000 in my neighborhood. And I'm working, you know, full-time job, and my parents are saying, why don't you buy a house? And I can't, like, but there's this, like, that's like stereotypical, but there's this mindset that things are bad. Like their life is bad. And I think there's a depressive mindset.
It's only going to get worse. I'm saying, like, that's probably what they
think. They're not, there's,
yeah.
So when I was growing up, like, there's always an optimism that, like, my parents were doing well, I'm going to do better. Like, I'm going to have a better life than them. My life is going to be, like, and to be fair, in a lot of ways, I I do. Like, I didn't struggle in a lot of the same way that my parents would have when they were younger. I have a TV in my backyard. Like, that would have been a sign of, like, insane wealth when I was growing up. Now, yeah. It helps that TVs have dropped in prices aggressively, and they fit on walls as opposed to being these things.
Helps but, like, that China industrialized.
Yeah, for sure. But, I mean, there's this thought, when my whole childhood growing up, like, I was not scared of launching into adulthood because I wasn't, like, it's just what you do, and it was going to be okay. Like, there was going to be a job for me, and I just had enough arrogance, I guess, to do that. And I feel like that's not the way culture, as a generation, that they view it. And I think it affects the way in which they view, like, the Lord generally. Like, if you come into your life pessimistic, mm-hmm. that life isn't going to get better, and there's these rich fat cats who are opposed to you, who,
yeah.
And then they lump those rich fat cats as being like church going people because mm-hmm. the older generation was in church, and so now they're the nemesis, yeah. And they align the church as the nemesis of their economic progress, and then you run into someone who, when you're like, hey, let me tell you about Jesus, they're like, well, let me tell you about.
Yeah,
you know, all the bad things the church has done throughout history, and help.
Me tell you about the Crusades. Yeah,
and so I think there's a real pessimism inside of them, which is a pain point, but it's also an opportunity to share the gospel,
mm-hmm.
right? Because if you're pessimistic, if you're really beat down about the world around you, buddy, I got some good news for you.
Yeah,
like yeah, this.
Don't worry about it, buddy.
In this world, you may have trouble.
Yeah.
My man, take heart, Christ is over. That's what it says on our billboard outside right now. Like, in this world, you'll have trouble. Take heart, Christ has overcome the world. Like, yeah, I know that it seems bad, and I know that everyone else has gotten ahead, and all the generations ahead of you, and now you don't get a pension, you're on a 401k, and your company won't even let you divest from them, and they're a terrible company. Like, all of your issues, because these Gen Z guys are starting to go into work now.
Oh, yeah, I work with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, like, these are young professionals.
Yeah. Yeah,
there are some still probably in school, but, because, like, my college-age daughters are Gen Z for sure, but.
I feel like, we feel like first-world countries are still very different, but I think that's a pervasive thought. I think they have that problem in China as well, like, where young people are just like, I'm just going to take any old job. Because it doesn't matter how hard I try. And that they have this phrase, and I can't remember the Chinese way of pronouncing it, but it's like, let it rot. Or that's like their young people's ideology is this let it rot. That's what they say and they post. Is like, they're just like, I'm just going to sit here at my desk at work and not do a thing because it doesn't matter.
Yeah. And that sort of like, despair.
Yeah.
Like the Bible speaks to states of extreme despair.
Mm-hmm.
Like David, Psalms of extreme despair.
Yep.
And so we have like a message to contextualize to be like, hey, I know you feel like this. Well, I don't know if you've read this book, but God's got some stuff in here for you. And the church has grown historically under persecution and difficult circumstances because. Like, we have hope, like mm-hmm. real, genuine hope, not some false hope, pie in the sky that one day you're going to make your money. I think you have, yeah. like, churches that prey on people to say, like, if you give, then you're going to get. But the real hope that, like, there is a future where one who sees you will reward you.
Yeah.
And so to start there in your gospel presentation, be like, I hear you're despairing, and you don't see there's any purpose to this life, and... There's no reason to get married, and there's no reason to have kids, and there's no reason to do any of this stuff. Because
there's a million reasons not to have kids or get married in their book.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But let me tell you about Jesus. Let me tell you about a God who sees us in the midst of our despair and has provided an outlet for that. And it's a beginning of a conversation point because you find where they hurt, because wherever, if it's a genuine pain, the Bible has spoken to it. Like, whatever your genuine struggle is, the Bible has spoken to it. And so you have those opportunities to begin those conversations.
Yep.
And you'll see, well, in Gen Z specifically, you see, like, this view of, like, rising religious connection among young men.
I hope it, yes, you do.
And so the women are, this is the first generation in a long time where the men are outpacing the women in their return to religion.
Great. I mean, it's great that anybody's moving that direction.
And I think part of that is these men, you know, as women have entered the workforce and like in a lot of ways, like girls are better students. They sit better at their desks. They perform better in the classes. And so these women have entered into the workforce and they're kind of well prepared for it. God bless them for that. But the men begin to feel like,
but they leave a giant. Well, yeah, they leave a giant void
on the back end.
On the back end, and it that when they outperform the guys, it's kind of lose-lose on both. I don't know. That sounds misogynistic, but you get what I'm saying.
Oh, I'd like you to expand on that, please, Zach.
Well, like you. The guys who are not good raisers of children, things like that, are competing with the people who are good. I don't know.
You're saying
nurturing.
You're saying typically
you're
ladies.
You're going to see a devolution of the family unit because integral parts are not there anymore.
Yeah. And we see that. But I think there's hope there because I think that's why the gospel is penetrating in those younger men is because they're actually slightly more despondent than the women about these things. And they've realized like, oh, there's hope in Jesus Christ. Like there's something there.
Yeah.
Where I'm being called to do something that matters. Like the Chinese people were saying, let it rock, because none of this stuff matters. Well, I want to tell you, the conversation that you have with your neighbor.
You're right. None of this does matter.
Yeah, the conversation you have with your neighbor about Jesus Christ,
Man,
it matters.
Yeah.
It's like you can have some purpose. Yeah, you may be making a widget 8 hours a day, but you know your great-grandfather made widgets 8 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
But there's purpose even in the widget making because it gives you an opportunity to build a relationship with people who need Jesus. And so when we're having these conversations with this emerging generation, this Gen Z generation, to recognize those pain points and to kind of like flesh those out. It's like for Gen X, the pain point is they've neglected. Like they feel like no one.
Latchkey kids.
Yeah, no one cared about them. And, you know, both parents were starting to work. And there was, you know, and so there's a sense of like abandonment inside of Gen X. Well, let me tell you about someone who never abandons you.
Another benefit to women entering the workforce.
Well,
sorry, I'm just leaning into that.
Yeah,
it's funny, but
and I think there's places where it's necessary or good for dual income where you need it. My wife's working right now, so I'm not fully down on that. But I'll tell you, my house runs better. My life is easier. When all of the things that my wife used to be able to do were being done without me having to manage that myself. And I don't mean that to sound dismissive of her work that she's doing now or anything.
I'm not either. Taylor works when she is able.
So. Yeah. So I just think
it just sucks.
You just always have her pregnant, so she can't
be that way. You know? Yeah.
Well, and I think that's the other thing where people feel like we have to work two jobs because the rents are too high. And that gets back into the pessimism, which gives you another opportunity to share.
It's a feedback loop. Yeah.
But I think as we're looking at gospel things, when I'm sharing the gospel with someone, I'm always trying to identify, like, where does the gospel meet this person today? Like, what is the thing that they're frustrated with this world? Because I feel very confident if I can identify that, I can at least point them to the fact that Jesus Christ has given them a better path forward. So whether it's abandonment that Gen X type people have, or pessimism that Gen Z has, or with the boomers, if it's self-reliance and stuff like that, and then finding the self-reliance failing as the boomers get older when their health begins to fail.
Yeah.
And then you can have conversations with them about like, hey, let me tell you about the one who heals. And he may not heal you here. yeah. but peels things.
I have literally have family members and like older family members. When I was reading The Great Divorce, you know, there's these different archetypes of people that the narrator comes across. Yeah. And one of them is the guy who gets off the bus and just immediately gets back on. Cause he's like, he has that self-reliance. He's like, I gets there on me own steam. I don't take no handouts. You know, he's this big, tough guy. He punches somebody and gets back on the bus. Like that's the mentality I think of with like a lot of my older male family members. There's like, you don't gotta give me nothing for free. Like it's almost pride. It's definitely pride, but it's pride causing a revulsion to the very idea. It's taken deep enough seed that creates this revulsion to the very idea of even being offered something.
At some point, though, most people will reach a point where they recognize that worldview is failing.
Yeah.
Right. And they'll come like, oh my goodness, I'm not where I need to be. Mm-hmm. And so I've shared before, probably on the podcast, but there was a man who I met at Gaddy's, and when I first got here, and I introduced myself as the pastor, and he said, oh, we're members of that church.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, well, I haven't met you, and I introduced myself. I'd been here about a month or two. It's weird if I hadn't met them, if they were members, I thought, but whatever, like, people are busy. Mm. And they said, oh, we don't come. And I thought, oh, okay. Like, you're on a different scale. And then his health failed. His body was breaking down against him. He comes walking in the back door of the church, the front door of the church, or whatever, one Sunday. He's like, I've realized I can't. And that was sort of our conversation. So, like, I had a really sweet period of ministry with him.
Praise God when people get to make it that long.
Yeah, I had, you know what I mean? Like, 4 months before he died. And to think, like, what could have been had he mm-hmm. come to his senses, you know, 5 years earlier when I met mm-hmm. him initially. But when that pain point comes, that's when you have those conversations.
Yeah.
That's when you jump in and begin to say, hey, let's talk about this. And so how can I, if I'm in a conversation with someone, how do I begin to identify some of those hooks? What are the questions I can ask? Is there, what, or do I just listen? What do I do?
No, I think you just listen. People will talk about what's bothering them, you know, if you're around them long enough.
But I really like to interrupt. I do that a lot. By the way, I listen back to the podcast sometimes and I'm like, Matt, you are so...
I'm the worst at interrupting. Constantly, like, and then I'll shut up for a long time and be like too silent and not respond when I should, because I'm like, oh, I need to just let other people talk for a little bit.
Yeah, it's hard to discipline yourself to listen, though. But if you're a believer,
yeah,
and if you just want to be a good friend to somebody, mm-hmm. just listen.
Yep,
because people like talking about themselves.
Yep,
so give them a chance to talk about themselves, and you'll hear things. Kind of consistent things. Oh, they're really unsatisfied in their dating life, or they're really unsatisfied in their work life, or they're struggling with their children. Mm-hmm. And you just hear, right? You just hear the person and deal with the individual, mm-hmm. understanding that there's some overarching things that, like, oh, their generation has self-reliance, or their generation has anxiety about the future.
And then Schaefer goes on after that excerpt, and he starts to get into it, but he's saying, you know, there's all these, you have to be able to speak into a generation their own age, but there's also these things that stay the same from generation, from age to age. There are constants. And the other, like, the constant I would start with is just sin and brokenness. And because even a person who has a completely polished exterior in life knows something about themselves, even that maybe nobody else, you know, everybody knows the ways in which they're broken. We're for the most case, fully aware of those, unless you're some type of sociopath. But like you can even plant a seed that way. You know, I have to be in conversation to figure out how to bring it up, but because it would change from person to person, but, you know, approaching that topic of, you know, well, you know, I just have these things about myself that I'm deeply unhappy with, or things that I do and I don't know why, and here is how Christ helped me through that struggle or overcome that, or, you know, live with it, deal with it, whatever.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, your idea that this, the understanding of sin and brokenness is ubiquitous. Like it's everyone can sense it.
Mm-hmm.
We do sense it because everything's broken. The problem is people look for poor alternatives to solve
it. Yeah.
So they think like, well, if we just vote for those Democrats, they're going to solve all this stuff.
Yeah.
Because they're
Once technology is sufficiently advanced, it will solve all this for us. Or
yeah, that's what AI is doing.
Transhumanism, right, all that stuff. I mean, that's big now.
Yeah, and so I think they're aware that there's a brokenness in the system. They may not be aware that it's sin, like an offense to a holy God.
Mm-hmm.
But they recognize that there is something truly wrong inside of them.
Yeah.
Because they can't stay disciplined, you know, to do what it is that they intend to do. And we have words for that as well, right? Like that you're failing, but that's the human condition.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're sinners. But God, being rich in mercy, sent his son.
By Jesus God. Christ. Yeah.
And so to push people towards that transition of but God is a wonderful way just to bridge the gap. And if you want to be an evangelist in your workplace or in your community, you need to be an active listener. You need to be a good listener, which my wife would join in the course and say, Matt, you can be a terrible listener sometimes.
My wife.
Yeah. I can be.
Don't ask my wife. I hope she doesn't listen to this. But
I hope you listen, Taylor. And I hope you get all over him. She'll listen. Yeah.
She'll listen. But yeah, I'm a terrible listener. But on the off chance or on my off day when I'm actually doing okay at it, that's the best route to go to figure out what's really eating somebody.
Yeah, and I just think we're called to share the gospel. And I think that's true of all believers. Like, we're called to be his witnesses. And so if that's true, then we need to engage our relationships, not fully transactionally, like I'm only in a relationship with you so I can tell you about Jesus, but you need to have that as your purpose. Like at the end, if you've been with someone for 40 years in a working environment or a neighbor environment, and all they know about Jesus is like, well, I guess Zach goes to church sometimes. Seems like he's gone most Sunday mornings. Comes back, his kids are wearing nicer clothes.
Yeah.
Like if that's all they know about you, you really did fail them. Like you showed them a great disservice by being their friend, but never telling them the good news of Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I need to know where you stand.
Yeah, and it's not hard to do, but it takes purpose.
Yeah,
to do it, you can't just walk in with your eyes closed and oh, it'll be all right. Do. Like you have to purpose. Say I'm gonna make sure that when the door opens, I'm not going to be scared to say the word.
Yeah, unless you're some very talented public speaker, just walking in with some boilerplate thing that you use on every person is probably not going to work unless it's something you've practiced or are very good at or is some very compelling argument.
And you can do, I mean, like, you know, I have people who would be like, well, you know, do you know what would happen if you died tonight, where you'd spend eternity? Right, like, and that's like a really powerful question because it moves people there. At some point, that's a question that you probably should ask your friends, like somewhere along the line of like, what's going to happen when this wraps up?
The answer I'll get is a lot of people just think there's nothing, or that's the most common non-Christian answer.
I'll get.
It's just nothing. We're just everything was chance. We're born without purpose. We prolong our life through chance, and we will die and immediately enter oblivion. Like that's what's in the cards for us. Everyone, you know.
And the evangelism technique there is like, how's that sound?
Yeah, yeah, right.
Do you feel?
Is that appealing?
Do you feel like that's compelling?
Yeah.
And then you start doing some arguments from nature of like, does it make sense that God would have made, or that the world would have just evolved into some beautiful place for our enjoyment? Yeah, you get into
apologetics at that point,
right? Like our. There's beauty and like God gave us relationships, or you find relationships and meaning in there and work and meaning in there. And like, you understand like this stuff isn't happenstance. Like there's possibly some order to this. And a lot of people will be able to walk down that path, but you've got to start up somewhere. And you've got to have those conversations. And you've got to have them that are specific to the person you're speaking to, being consistent and considerate of where they are. And then if you are blessed enough to be involved in the leading of someone to Jesus Christ, then you need to take the responsibility of mentoring them to the best of your ability and then plugging them in to a community of faith, church, who can equip them to withstand the arrows of Satan that are going to be flying quickly to every new believer out there.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's a good general conversation. You got anything you wanted to add in there? I didn't want to shortcut us anywhere, but I feel like we've covered a good bit there.
No. You said earlier something about let me tell you about my Jesus, and it made me think of that really terrible song that's out right now. Have you heard it? It's like a country song some girl sings where she's like, "Let me tell you about my Jesus." You ever heard that one?
Maybe.
It's very terrible. It's
very terrible.
Yeah.
Why is it?
It's like
terrible?
One of those, let's go to church, aka the bar, and like one of those very terrible,
I feel like,
wishy-washy cultural Christian.
I feel like Third Day or Mercy Me has its own call. Let me tell you about my Jesus as well.
I'm sure it's way better than this, like Gretchen Wilson or Lainey Wilson or some other
Deborah country Wilson singer or girl.
Deborah Wilson was an actor in a, yeah. Anyway, but that, you know, that where I was going with that, where it struck me originally when you said it like 15 minutes ago, was that there's this, that all the good aspects of God are universal. That you don't need to give somebody a washed down gospel. And in fact, that's the worst thing you can, not the worst thing you can do, but it's one way you can really go astray, is trying to tailor the mess, trying to tailor the gospel to them. Tailor your conversation to them, but the gospel is always the same.
Yeah, and that's the real point, right? That there is a central truth that is unshifting.
Yeah.
But there's a myriad of ways that we can walk with people to where they can discern, well, I kind of understand why I need that now.
Yeah.
Like I may not be there. Maybe the Spirit hadn't drawn them yet.
Yeah.
But I kind of get what you're doing now a little more, because it really would be nice for this life to have some purpose other than using up calories.
I think that's what's reaching, like, especially young guys, is that, like, man, this, the way the world has been working is not working out. Not only is it not working out for me, it's ostensibly not working out for anybody but a select few people. But Christ's message of salvation and his hope has always been the same. And it's the anvil that's worn out many hammers.
Mm-hmm.
It's still the same. Always has been. And I think that's appealing to people. Whenever all the shifting tides of life have gotten to you.
Well, like Sunday, you know, I talked about how the church is the buttress and pillars of truth. Like, the idea of if we have a firm foundation based on the truth of Christ,
yeah,
it's what we are. And so the church stands firm. While there may be churches that fall away because they've removed the foundation, they're no longer upholding the foundation, they're going somewhere else. But the church, Christ's church, will hold the foundation, and it will be there as something for people to set their eyes on and say, oh, there it is.
Yeah.
Let's get there.
The last thing that makes me think of is the Lewis quote, where he's talking about, like, if you want to defend a lion that's in a cage, the best thing to do is let it out of the cage. Like, don't try to stand in front of it and protect it.
It's
let
a
it
lion.
Out. It's a lion. Just let it out. And it's like, that's the most powerful thing you can do.
Yeah.
So just give people the unadulterated truth.
Yeah. I like that. I like that. So this week we had a prominent Christian.
Somebody who did that. Yeah.
Who was pretty fearless in everything that he did. Took plenty of barbs along the way. I'm sure there's things somewhere along the way that I'd say, oh, I don't like how Vody handled this or whatever. But, you know, on the whole, like, I grew up in Houston. Vody Baucom went to Houston Baptist.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And I remember I was in high school, and I was at, like, we went to some conference somewhere. A lot of speakers coming through the conference, and this guy comes in named Vody Baucom. And I remember at 17 or 18 hearing this guy preach, and I was like, oh, this guy's the real deal. Like, I've heard a lot of cotton candy, sugar, because at youth events you get a lot of that, mm-hmm. you know, sugar stick stuff. And he just came in and with earnest passion, like, pled with people to believe on the Lord
Jesus Christ. Earnest, unapologetic
yeah.
passion.
Just pled yeah. with people to put away the nonsense and believe in Jesus. And I thought, well, there's a guy who yeah. I'd never heard of him. I was like, he's a solid dude. And then, you know, I think he got kind of like pushed out of like Southern Baptist life for whatever reason. He was not in the favored group for some reason. And then reemerged as a real influencer in some other areas. And so we have a little clip of Vody preaching. Yeah. That we wanted to share with you guys before we clock out for today. So you got that, Zach?
Yeah, apologies for the horrible music that they may or may not play.
Justified, and we're adopted into the family of God, and we're sanctified, and as his children, we begin to bear the family resemblance, and we're further sanctified throughout this life by the very same gospel that saves us, until one day when it's all said and done, we're not just saved from the penalty of sin. We're not just saved from the power of sin, but one day we're glorified and saved from the very presence of sin. That's the gospel that we preach. That's the gospel that we need. And that's the gospel that's more than enough.
If you enjoyed today's short video.
So
I didn't realize there was a tagline in there at the end, but yeah.
Right. So we have a gospel that we believe. That saves us not just from the penalty of sin, but from the very presence of sin.
Yeah.
We'll be removed from the Ultimately, presence of sin yeah. and glorified.
That's great.
And today, Vody rests glorified in Christ Jesus, mm-hmm. saved from the presence of sin. What a wonderful thing that is. One day, may we join him in eternity there. So that's a little tribute to Vody there.
Yeah, he really was a great preacher. Holds your attention.
Yeah. Yeah. Love the Lord. Love the Lord. Rest easy, Vody. See you soon. Let me pray. Lord, I love you. Thank you for faithful witnesses like Vody, others as well, gone on to be with you. I'm holding firm to the gospel. Let those of us who are left hold the gospel up, be willing to engage in meaningful conversations with those people that you put into our world, finding their pain points and hurt points and pointing them to the one who will solve all those problems through the death, the burial, the resurrection of your Son, Jesus Christ. Give us a heart for the lost, a passion to reach them, eyes to see them, and ears to hear them. Thank you, Lord, for finding us, saving us. Help us to be on a rescue mission for you. We love you. Amen.
Amen.
Peace.